Hi, K-Watchers. It's Leanne.
Hi, everyone. It's Juliet. Welcome to the K-Watch Party.
Today, we have Culinary Class Wars, Episodes 1 and 2. Our listeners have spoken. They wanted Culinary Class Wars, so we said, heard. Let's dig in.
Heard.
Heard is a reference from The Bear. Did you catch that?
Oh, is it?
Yes.
I thought it was, bitch! I saw this TikTok that was like, what's the most famous like Bay Area word? And a few people said hella, but I think that's kind of old now.
And everybody uses hella now. It's not even a NorCal thing anymore.
And the majority of people said, bitch! I think that's also from some song. Anyway.
Culinary Class Wars was very reminiscent to me of The Bear, the show that's on Hulu. That's like about a chef.
Oh, you said bear. I thought you said Bay Area.
That was a weird transition, but okay, we'll go with it. Okay. No, The Bear,
yes. Heard, that's Heard. Right. Heard Chef,
yes, Chef. But when we watch some of the guys that are on Culinary Class Wars, it really reminds me of Carmi, like season one, where he has flashbacks of when he spent time in a fine dining 3-star Michelin restaurant and how intense it was. And so every time Chef On walks up to somebody and his hands are behind his back and asking questions, I'm like, that feels like Carmi in The Bear. Anyway, how are you, Juliet? How was your week?
Well, my morning has been a bit of a bitch energy because I got this email that came in the middle of the night. I saw it when I woke up and it said that my email had been changed on my Southwest account. And I was like, I didn't do that at whatever 1 a.m. So I'm kind of like futzing around on the website and I see that someone has changed my email, my address to someplace in Oklahoma. So I call over to Southwest and as I'm looking, I'm like, wait, I have 400 points? That's weird because I could have sworn I had like 48,000. And she's like, oh, yeah, it looks like somebody wiped out your entire account.
No.
I don't know. Something about that just feels so violating.
Yes.
And
you worked hard for those points.
I really did. I was being very strategic about those restaurant and those grocery points that I use on my Southwest credit card. But also, I was saving those up. Anyway, that was my morning. So I was a little flustered by that.
I was changing my Disney Plus account password.
Is that why it doesn't work anymore?
Oh, are you using ours? No. I don't know who's using what.
You know, amongst our families and another few families, we are all sharing different accounts,
that's
you know?
Right. We know what everybody's watching on YouTube TV, on HBO. I do have another friend in the neighborhood who uses our Disney Plus account, and I got that email notification that somebody was logging into my account from Europe, like Poland or somewhere, like something sketchy. So I pinged my friend. I was like, are you sharing my, you know, she's like, no, it's not me. And I go and look at my account management section. There must have been 10 European IPs that had logged in to my Disney Plus account that were at some point using them. Also kind of violating that there's somebody sneaking in.
Almost as if somebody has come into your home, into like your private life and invaded it.
Literally though, this happened to my parents. Their checking account at Wells Fargo got this whole thing where they went in and they created another account at Wells and they transferred all the money from my parents' checking out into, yeah. And so luckily my mom doesn't keep that much in checking, right? But it alerted them a new account had been created. And so they just go in and they had his social security, everything. And so it is very scary what is out there about us on the dark web and people are really using it. We have to be very vigilant, you know, about your Disney accounts and your bank accounts. Well, I'm sorry that happened. That sucks.
So I have been in the depths of interviewing for a job, looking kind of casually for a job, and I'll get interviews here and there. And this most recent round, I had 5 rounds of interviews. Like, is a brutal, if anybody out there is looking for a job, you know, it is a brutal job market and they are making people jump through so many hoops. Anyhow, I just got a rejection for this job.
Oh no, I'm sorry. But,
so I can make fun of what happened.
Okay.
I doubt that this person will ever listen to the podcast.
You're in your like grief processing mode right now. And is this the mockery mode?
So this was with the head of the team. Uh-huh. It was very serious. The minute she turned on the camera, she did not have a smile. Like I almost felt like, oh, she just did not like my face. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one of those vibes. Mm-hmm. But it was intense. She asked me at least 25 questions. Wow. And it went almost for an hour. The minute she got on, I was like, something about her eyebrows are weird. And then I realized as she was rubbing her eyes that she had an eyebrow filter on her face.
No.
So every time she would rub it, the eyebrow would be on her hand. I was like, is this a test? Is she waiting for me to say something? But I just like couldn't focus on it because it was distracting me so much.
God, that's amazing.
But it was so contradictory to her personality.
Right.
You know, she was like very serious. She did not crack a smile. And then here she was with these fake eyebrows on her face.
Maybe for interviews, she puts on her mean eyebrows.
Yeah, I know. So I thought that was funny. That was a funny thing that happened during the week.
Yeah. What if it was a test in their interview to like test your forthrightness, you know? Or like when people have food on their face, you're always like, do I tell them?
Yes, right.
Or there's something stuck in their teeth. Do you just let it go? And maybe this was your Rorschach test for how honest you're going to be to a person's face.
Maybe that was what it was and I failed it.
Like you should, you know, now as your like thank you email to her or whatever, you should send her a link to the eyebrow tattoo blading places. You'd be like, look, lady, I don't know if you know this, but there are these places where you can actually tattoo an eyebrow on it. It looks really
burn
real.
That bridge.
Right. Have you done the eyebrow tattoo?
I have not. The funny story about that is when we went to Korea many years ago with our friend, she needed me to go with her because she needed a translator.
Right.
And so
and this is the eyebrow blading.
Microblading.
Microblading, yeah.
And it was super hot back then. This was like 8 years ago. And I had found a place that this beauty blogger had recommended. So I had also booked a session for myself and then two friends. And before I went, I had seen my aunts who are, I mean, they're naturally very beautiful. I wouldn't say they're all about being natural, but they were very discouraging about it. They were like, don't do it. You're going to regret it. Like, that's going to be terrible for you. And I have always just been a people pleaser, you know. And so I go to the place like ready to do it. But then their voice was in my head and I laid down and then I got up and I was like, I can't do it.
Oh, really? You even laid down?
So I got up and I just sat there and watched them get it done and help translate.
You watched them get it done? Like get their little eyebrows sliced open?
I mean, they don't slice it open. It's basically like a little needle. Actually, it's like a razor blade.
Yeah.
Right? And then she puts the ink into it.
Oof.
It looked painful.
And then that friend came out looking like Bert from Bert and Ernie. I still remember seeing her. I was there on
that
trip.
I can't get that image out of my head. Granted, you know, it's very intense when you first get it. But because also the eyebrow trend was to be very straight back then.
Yes. She looked like a Muppet. And then she slept on a white pillowcase.
I remember this so vividly.
And the imprint on the white pillowcase was like a worm was crawling across, like a fuzzy caterpillar. Oh my gosh.
Oh, that was so good. I want it because a lot of women say that it's great to wake up and have your eyebrows done. I mean, it's like you. Your eyebrows are all done. You don't need to put anything in them.
I have a natural blade.
Very dark and bushy. But I also really like the shape of my eyebrows. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it doesn't take much to do like a quick swipe.
Yeah. The other thing I'm watching right now, because eyebrows reminded me of them because they all have such fabulous eyebrows, is Love is Blind, Habibi. Are you watching this? Oh my God. It's so
I have not watched it, but I have seen it and I've been so interested in it. And you're right. They do have amazing eyebrows.
The women on the show are all very beautiful.
Oh, so beautiful, which I think is a little different than some of the other
Love is Blind,
Love is Blind franchises.
But the men are not.
Ah.
It's interesting because I think the stereotype is that Arabic men and women are all very good looking and beautiful. And so the women definitely fall into that, but the men don't. I don't think universally. So it is so fascinating.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm going to watch that next.
I literally watched it in one night. I binged
what?
It all. Yes. Which is very unlike me because I don't actually watch a lot of these Love is Blind type reality shows. But my husband was out of town and I just started it and I could not stop. I ended up sleeping like in the wee hours of the morning.
Really?
Just blew through it. If you need, you know, like a little palate cleanser after some culinary wars. like Love is Blind is like a sorbet
for
Culinary Wars because it's so the opposite and so amazing.
So on Monday, it was Indigenous Peoples Day. Mm-hmm. So the kids were off of school. I took them to the Asian Art Museum in San Francisco.
Yep.
And they're doing a special exhibit currently called Hallyu, which is the term used for the Korean wave into the Western world. And it was so cool as a Korean American woman slash girl who grew up in a time when these things, they were all part of my coming of age, but were not in the mainstream. And so it was like something that was very close to me, but that I couldn't really share with other people. Or, you know, I wouldn't say that I was ashamed, but it wasn't something that was well known.
And it was also, it was like me, Taylor Swift, circa 2006. Like everybody thought it was cheesy and I had to hold it close to my chest. And right. Now everyone's a freaking Swiftie and it's so annoying for me now. But anyway, keep going. Same
thing. Don't worry, I'm not a Swiftie, even though my son bullies me about not being a Swiftie. So we went to it and they had old school drama posters and they had old school like 80s, 90s K-pop groups, idol groups, and all the paraphernalia, but then all of the recent ones, and they had a big
Squid
screen.
Game.
They had an interactive exhibit for Squid Game, as well as a big screen playing all of the recent major K-pop groups, like all their music videos. And it was really, it really made me feel so proud to be Korean, and for this to be something that people paid to come see. The exhibit was packed.
So there we have Juliet's Korean Pride Corner. Happens every episode. Okay, not to like tear you guys down, but have you been following what's happening to that K-pop group RIZE, that boy band?
I only know that one of the boys is leaving.
But he basically got kicked out. And they're like a very new, fresh group. They're supposed to be like the future of boy bands there. They're on some big label. And this one boy, before he debuted, there were some photos leaked of that time where he was in bed with his girlfriend at the time and they're maybe kissing, but they're like fully clothed. There's one of him smoking a cigarette, like just very banal young teenager things to do. And these were leaked and now he's been kicked out. And so they put him on a hiatus and then they said, oh, he can come back. So they announced that he's coming back. And then the netizens started putting funeral wreaths outside of the record label's building that are basically like, you guys are dead to us. How dare you bring him back?
Oh, how dare you bring him back?
Yes. And so they've kicked him out now again.
Jesus.
I know. This poor young man.
Leanne's weekly corner of tearing down Korean culture. But, you know, as we know now, based on having watched Popstar Academy, there is an image that the Korean record labels really push these idols to abide by.
And it's because the netizens expect it.
Yeah.
And they will not take anything else.
Regardless of whether the netizen is smoking or sleeping with their girlfriend or whatever, it's like they idolize, truly idolize these idols to the point that you have to be Puritan. You cannot, you know, show any erotic desire. You can't show, you know, any kind of vices. And that is really unfortunate.
I know. Anyway, I'm sorry. Whenever you go high on Korea, I gotta take you down one notch.
Listen, I know there's a real dark side to all of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just excited that people care to watch this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the Asian Art Museum here is a big deal. I bet the next time that exhibit tours, they're gonna have to add Culinary Class Wars to the mix because this show
is so hot right now.
Huge.
In fact, we really resisted recapping it for a variety of reasons. One, I think it is still a tough show to recap, but man, our, I don't know, 10 fans, 10 listeners really were pushing us to recap the show. So you asked, we listened.
Culinary Class Wars, it's on Netflix. It is another very large scale production reality show coming out of Korea. I feel like Korean variety and reality shows are either like a budget of $4 and everyone's carrying around their own GoPros because they don't have like cameramen, or it's this scale where they build this shit out so massively. It's insane in giant warehouses. This feels, again, like Physical 100. And it's just very large scale production. I read that an anonymous source said that the total production cost for the show was reportedly around 10 billion won or $7 million USD. Yeah, which I think might be how much reality shows cost here, but like they're on islands, you know, they're on remote locales. Yeah, these guys are just like in a warehouse. And, you know, like they're paying them, what, like $1,000 a week? It's just the large scale of it that I think makes it so expensive.
But did they need all of that production? When they reveal the white spoons, they're coming up from like the ground up. You know, so they had to create something that was movable. Then there were graphics, like it looked like a rave.
Yeah. The music was pumping. The lights are going. It felt very Iron Chef. That's how they do the Iron Chef.
That's right. You know?
I think a lot of the spectacle is what draws people in. And they're really like in the name of the title, Culinary Class Wars. Like what a name, right? Like you kind of just get the whole gist of the show in those three words. Because they are trying to set up a battle. And so, and a hierarchy. And so I do think the spectacle of it makes it more like gladiator stadium style. Right. The series made history as the first Korean entertainment show on Netflix to rank number one among non-English language television shows for three consecutive weeks. It's a very niche record that they hold.
Who are they competing against?
I think, you know, like Squid Game is up there. Physical 100 hit number 100, one.
I think so.
But maybe not for three consecutive weeks. I mean, who knows what any of these records are. It's a huge success in Korea. My friend Hannah was just there. She just came back and she messaged us and was like, this is all anyone's talking about in Korea right now.
Yeah, one of my cousins is in Korea and she's like, you cannot get into any of these contestants' restaurants.
Right.
Even the really small ones that were like in the alleyway, just lines
impossible.
Out the door.
Yeah, they've already greenlit season two, and it's coming in the back half of 2025. So that'll be cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The premise of the show is they bring 100 chefs into this contest. We see in the first episode that 80 of them are what they call black spoons, who are kind of up-and-coming chefs. And then there's the 20 white spoons, which are all internationally renowned chefs of some Korean origin or cook. Right. In Korea.
I think they also had a hard time distinguishing why the people down there would be considered black spoons and were considered white spoons. It seems, you know, either you have a Michelin star, you've won a international or national television show displaying your culinary skills, whereas the people who were black spoons are people who probably have well-established restaurants or work at some really renowned restaurants, but don't have the same kind of name recognition.
Yep.
But the thing about the black spoon and the white spoon, this theory, I think a lot of people were confused by it. Also, the fact that the people who are not as good are considered black and the people who are really good are considered white. I think there was a little bit of confusion, at least on the internet, around what that was. One of the foreign guys, he whispered to a Korean guy, he's like, I don't understand the cultural significance of black and white. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, oh, because there were classes, economic classes, and then you would have like the golden spoon, which is at the top, like the royal. And then at the very bottom would be what you would call dirt spoons.
Oh.
And dirt in Korean is hook, but it's spelled differently than hook, which is another way to say black in Korean. So it's not like they're looking at it as a racial difference, which I think some people thought it might be. But in fact, it was. That was how social economic stratification was classified back in the day.
Got it. Fascinating. So was there a white spoon economic level?
So I think the gold is also what you would consider white.
Got it. When I got married, my mother-in-law
gifted. Oh, God, I'm scared.
No.
She gave you a dirt spoon?
She gave me a black spoon and my husband got a gold spoon. Can you imagine? And I would just be like, ignorant.
These are for
and being
women.
Like,
these are for men.
I was just ignorant being like, yeah, thank you, Monim. No, she did give us a set, a matching pair set of beautiful chopsticks and a spoon set. They're definitely not full gold, but they're gold plated, right? So it definitely is the significance of elevated dining. Well, we use ours to just eat cereal. So
that's exactly what your ancestors had envisioned.
So the first segment of the first episode is us meeting the Black Spoons and the Black Spoons kind of meeting each other. They're all entering the room. It's very physical 100 style. Mm-hmm. There's no busts sitting around, no ceramic busts, but there are.
They have nameplates.
And it's of their chosen monikers.
Yes.
Because the idea here is that no one gets to know your real name until you've earned it. But there are some big names in the Black Spoon community.
Anyone you knew or recognized?
I mean, the only one I knew, and I think the most familiar face to our listeners, is probably Austin Kang.
Oh, shit. Fuck that shit.
I know. I was literally wrote down. I was like, what a master of the English language. I quote, oh, wow, damn, you know. Ah, shit, I'm fucked. Like, fuck this shit, you know. Those were
the
words.
That's all he said.
Those were his words. I was like, what is that? He grew up in Hacienda Heights. Like, what is this?
He's been living in Korea for too long now. He's probably forgotten
who he is. This affect is so unbecoming. It's embarrassing. Anyway, so Austin Kang, if you guys don't know him, he's the chef slash model slash Love After Divorce season 4 commentator.
And season 5. I saw him recently on season 5. But his Korean is not very good. So he's somewhere in between where he's just like lost all language. All he can say are curse words.
He's like in the in-between.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't know English, doesn't know Korean. Is he a good chef? Because I looked him up. He was a Master Chef Korea season 4 like semifinalist. So he made it pretty far in one of these contests that they have. So he must have some skill. We haven't seen him cook yet.
I totally forgot this. He was also on Physical 100.
Oh.
Remember?
Was he?
He showed up in that first scene. I feel like they bring him out for like clout.
Mm-hmm. So they can put him on a poster.
Yeah. And then he disappears. Because Physical 100, after the treadmill, he was gone.
Oh.
He left pretty early.
The other one that my husband knew was Sungwoo's dad.
Ah.
He is a YouTuber.
Right.
And he has 1.4 million subscribers.
Wow.
Yeah. So my husband has seen a lot of his videos on YouTube. Anybody you knew?
No. Austin was the only person that I've known previously.
Right.
Amongst the Black Spoons chefs. But there were a lot of characters. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who showed up in costume.
That we had a chicken.
Guy with a chicken head?
Yeah, he's a chicken restaurateur. We had a guy with an Elvis wig and sunglasses on.
Yeah.
Kind of an insano. There's the guy, the bibimbap guy came as like
Emperor.
King.
Yeah, yeah, king. And then the auntie, Imo, who it's not a costume, I guess, per se, but she was wearing her hanbok.
Yep.
A lot of these people do have their own restaurants. Like they have these small wine bars. They have a lot of restaurants that are probably quite popular in Seoul.
Yeah, it sounds like most of them are either executive chefs or own their own restaurants, if not one or two. And a lot of them actually have previous Michelin star restaurant experience. So the White Spoons, right, they come up out of this platform. The lights are shining down. The music's blasting. I found the spectacle to be very impressive. Like I had goosebumps. I was chilled to see them come up. The most famous, it seems like, of the White Spoons is
Choi Hyun-seok.
He is a fine dining chef.
Yes.
And by far, it seems like the biggest celebrity chef there. And my husband was saying that he's super famous and he's older. And we'll talk about the judges soon. But one of the judges, who is the only owner of a 3-star Michelin restaurant in Korea, Chef An, like there is a little bit of like a uncomfortable relationship there.
Oh, really?
Because he's technically his sonbae, right? The contestant is right. The judge's elder.
Right. There's a whole hierarchy in Korean culture. So just because you're older.
And more experienced.
Yeah. There's kind of a demand and an expectation for respect. How many Michelin stars does Chef Choi, his name is Choi or Choi Hyun-seok, have? He's the famous one.
It doesn't look like he has any.
Ah.
So it seems like he's very famous as a personality. It does seem like he's been on a lot of these shows as a judge before.
Right.
I think that's one of the things that it was so interesting about the White Spoons is that a lot of these contestants, these White Spoon contestants have more to lose than to gain. Right? The Black Spoons have everything to gain. These White Spoons, if you don't show up well.
Or you lose against especially a Black Spoon. Yeah, that's a real blow to your reputation.
And a lot of these Black Spoons are like, these guys should be judges, not contestants.
Right.
So it's interesting that they got such high caliber chefs, put their reputations on the line for the show.
Really all of them, because there was a point where the Black Spoons were being judged and some of the criticism was quite harsh about their cooking skills. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, ouch, like, would I want to go to this person's restaurant after having heard that? Probably not.
Right. Some other White Spoons, there's a very prominent Chinese chef.
Yeo Kyung Lee, he must be Chinese. Mm-hmm. That's a Chinese name.
Liu Qing Lai, I think, is his Chinese name. Zheng Ji Sun, she seems very famous.
Queen of Dim Sum.
Of course, we have Iron Chef 2010, Edward Lee from the U.S.
He's from Louisville. He was also a contestant on Top Chef. The other person that I recognized was Hong Kyung Longest. So if you are somebody who cooks Korean food and has looked up recipes, you'll have found her website before. She's probably on par with Mang Chi. Mm. She won a season of Restaurant Express, like early 2000s.
Is that a Korean
cooking show? No, it's an American show.
Oh.
So she lives in the U.S. and she has great recipes. Actually, I look at her website all the time for stuff. But she had gone vegan for a little while. And then just recently said, I'm not vegan anymore. Probably because she just wasn't getting the same traction that she used to get. But she is married to an American person. That's why her last name is Longest.
Oh, I see. And then lastly, we meet the two judges. We talked about these guys already to a great extent in our Popstar Academy Cat's Eye recaps that turned into mini Culinary Wars recaps. But we'll talk about them again. The first judge is
Baek Jong-won, arguably the most famous, well-known business person and chef in Korea.
He has over 2,000 restaurants all over the world.
Yeah, I thought it was just the jjajangmyeon places, but it turns out he has cafes, he has all sorts of
barbecue. Yeah, he has Hanshin Pocha, which opened up near us recently.
That's it?
Yeah, uh-huh. I eat the jjampong and I go drinking there all the time.
He also is a host of so many shows.
And a lot of travel shows too?
A lot of travel shows. Mm. He has his own YouTube channel. I've also watched his YouTube to cook. He teaches you how to make really basic Korean foods. Mm. So that's great. He also has a bunch of Netflix series focusing on a specific type of food, say like noodles. He had one that was pork. It makes you salivate. Oh. We're always ordering the food that he's featuring immediately after we watch it. I think what's interesting as you watch him and he goes around judges and somebody makes a comment like he likes food that appeals to the masses. Mm. And so I think some people are unsure if he's able to distinguish really like fine dining food and textures and things like that.
Yep. The other chef is An Sang-jae, the only chef in Korea to run a 3-star Michelin restaurant. As we talked about in Popstar Academy, he grew up in Korea. He moved to the U.S. when he was 13 and joined the military and then became a chef. And he trained under Corey Lee of Bainu, which
was that was not his first job, though, was it?
I think he was at French Laundry, too. Right.
Which is one of the most premier fine dining restaurants on the West Coast, at the very least. I'm not, yes. You know, I don't want to say the world, but it is very hard to get a reservation. It is also very expensive. Have you guys ever been?
We are thinking of going. Our friend's 50th birthday is coming up, and they wanted us all to take our families to Hawaii in January. We're like, no. So instead, we're going to spend that exact same amount of money.
Yeah, right.
And eat at French Laundry. So there, hopefully we can get a reservation. And I'll report back on how it is.
Do you like fine dining course food where you're always hungry afterwards?
Where you're like, is it meant to be this slow?
Yeah.
And this small?
Where's the Taco Bell?
Yeah, seriously. Me and my husband, avoid these long course fancy meals because I'm also like, I don't want to sit for 12 courses with my husband. By course two, we've run out of things to say.
There's nothing left to say to each other. You're just looking around.
Yeah. It's just like crickets are chirping. Yeah. And these restaurants are also like stifling in how quiet
they
are.
Yes, they're so quiet. Yes. There's almost never any music.
Right.
And so you can hear.
Like people are blinking.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
I have never been to French Laundry. And admittedly, I'm not at a place in my life where I'm like wanting to go there right now. I think in my previous life, pre-children, I enjoyed those kinds of places. There's a restaurant in San Francisco that we went to many years ago called Lazy Bear.
Yeah, I think it has one star.
Oh, it has one Michelin star. At that time in my life, everything was so unique and it was a real experience. They would come tableside and pour the sauces and the soups and whatnot. And I thought the service was incredible. The food was stuff that I hadn't really tasted before. So it was an experience that I really craved.
But there's also the ambiance to it, like Pujol in Mexico City, right? Like you walk in and it's a totally elevated experience from the minute you walk in, from the service to the tree that's growing in the middle of the restaurant.
Right? So there, like the bathroom even.
So there's definitely the
It's a whole 360 experience. It's not just the food.
Yeah.
I think right now I would prefer like a taco truck, you know, like that. I want something really filling and really tasty.
So Chef On worked for all these big places in the U.S. If you want to hear our Chef Corey Lee stories, both I have one and Juliet has one. If you want to hear that, you can go back, I think, two episodes in Popstar Academy. We talk about how Juliet could have been a Mrs. Corey Lee.
That's right.
So Chef On, he opened up Mosu in San Francisco. I think it did only okay. He moved to Korea and now here he is, three stars later, blinking on our TV screens in his purple suit. So the first cooking challenge is these black spoons are going up against each other. We're whittling it down to
20.
So they're cutting 60 people. And the prompt is to make your signature dish.
And they get 100 minutes, which is quite generous.
Yep. They're in kind of like a pit, a cooking pit. And then above them are these rafters where the white spoons get to stand. And the white spoons don't cook at this round. The Korean producers are very good at setting up these conflicts. Like they're very skilled at hitting on these like deep-seated emotions with these black spoons. It's like jealousy and like feelings of unfairness. Because you hear a lot of the black spoons being like, why don't they have to cook?
Yes.
And why do they get to stand up there? Are they better than us? And so there's a lot of kind of pitting people against each other to get that fire of competition under them. They're very, the producers are very good at this kind of thing.
They're also great at the editing where they'll show one person who's like hacking away at a piece of meat and then turn on like rock music. And then the fine dining chef is chopping very neatly and it's classical music. You know, I'm like so impressed at the production of this show. Yep.
We see a lot of people. We were presented with like 50 dishes that are being reviewed. But let's start with kind of the notable failures. The first one that stuck out to me was the guy who actually rang his bell first. You have to be pretty confident to ring your bell first. And he's on Chef On's side, who
I think is likely the more difficult judge to please. Because Baek Jong-won, I mean, they said the premise was, oh, we're going to judge purely on flavor. And Baek Jong-won, I think, stays true to that. I think Chef On is a little bit more
particular.
Yeah, about like the way things look.
He's smoking hamachi as an appetizer. He tells Chef On, I'm going to start with an appetizer because I'm looking at each episode as a course of a meal. So this is the first episode, so I'm going to start with an appetizer. Mm. And Chef On is like, yeah, okay, but what if you don't make it? And the guy's like, I'm that confident I'm going to make it.
And this guy says that this is a dish that he serves at his restaurant. Again, this is why I think this is a real ego, could be a very big ego blow, but also a reputation blow for some of these chefs.
Totally. Well, Chef On comes up for judging and destroys him. You think this is full bodied? You thought wrong, fool. This guy who thought he was going to stay for dessert ends up getting eliminated at the appetizer round. So I thought that was, he also looks like Woody from Toy Story. Go back and look at that.
Because he's thin and tall.
His face is very wooden-like and has a long chin.
The other notable elimination was the older woman. They call her like the family-style Korean chef. Oh, and her food looked so good.
She was the high money who had the blue scarf on her head.
Yeah. She made an oyster pancake, oyster kimchi, and then this maesaengi soup, which is, it's like it's seaweed, but it's a little bit of a different texture. It's like kind of slimy. Mm-hmm. oh my gosh, I wanted to eat that.
And all the white spoons that were standing above her were like, oh, if this was a Korean cooking show, she would win.
She would
the
win.
The hymeny would win, yeah, for sure.
But Chef On thinks her food is too salty.
That he looked this hymeny, who's been cooking for 30 years, in the face. The balls on this guy. He's like, sorry, hymeny. It's too salty. A few other notable eliminations was the chicken head guy. He makes a chicken burger. You think Peck is really going to like it? I'm also like, this guy has kept his chicken mask on the entire time. That's commitment to your chicken cause.
Yeah, and he couldn't taste his food.
Right.
Because he had the thing on.
And he could barely see because he's looking outside the beak.
Right.
He's looking down from the beak. So sweaty in there.
Another notable elimination was the good-looking guy who did beef.
Yes.
Just a beef rump.
Just the rump.
Apparently he was once on a dating show.
Yes, he was on Love Catcher in Bali.
I've never heard of the show.
No, and there's a lot of shows out there that we have not watched.
But see, this too, I was like, I don't want to go to your restaurant because Chef On just said that you don't know how to cook a steak.
Yeah, he says you lack skill.
You lack knowledge on how to cook a steak. I'm like, damn, bro.
Yes, but you know, also, you cannot be this overly confident.
Right.
Without
a Michelin star.
You know, he calls himself underestimated. That's his moniker. He is very pretty. He's like so pretty. He's like prettier than any girl in this competition. I think also that makes everybody want to tear you down.
Oh,
right? So like the steak might have been okay, but then Chef On looks at this pretty boy's face.
Yeah, he's like, who's not blinking aggressively.
And also is like, I'm so confident that I will impress you with just a piece of steak, no sauce, just some salt. That I think Chef On was also just like, get out of here, guy. Yeah. Like taking him down a peg, and he deserved it. He really looked like he knew what he was doing. He was flipping and turning. But I was like, this is almost so much show that actually, are you even doing the right thing? Like, should you be moving your meat
around?
Yeah, you're not
supposed to be moving your steak like that. You just keep it there.
Yeah. He like takes it off, rests it, puts it, smokes it, puts it back. Yeah. There's a lot of hot cold. And I'm pretty sure hot cold is not good for cooking a steak.
And when he cut it, I did notice it was like really pink at top and then brown at the bottom.
Yeah. Who are the standouts for you in terms of the ones who went on to be the top 20 that we've seen so far?
Pretty privileged bias, but I've got to say Triple Star. He's the guy that we have been talking about when we've been recapping Pop Star Academy.
He's Objectification Corner.
Yes.
The hottest one.
Glasses. Apparently he has a wife, so.
Oh, sad.
The netizens are upset.
I've seen a photo of him, I think it was Vogue Korea, and he doesn't have his glasses on.
Not as cute, right?
Not as cute.
I saw that too, and I was like, oh, wow.
He had his hair slicked back, like, not as cute.
Yep, I'm with you. But I love the way he works. He's so organized. He's very detailed. He is obsessive and confident, but not in the same way that the rump guy is confident.
No. And he's not showy.
He's not showy, yeah.
Rump guy is like all elbows and flipping and twirling. Triple Star is a quiet confidence.
Yep.
And that is 1,000 times sexier
than
a flashy confidence.
What about you? Anyone else that stood out?
The Chinese goddess of cuisine.
Of course.
She's the first to make it up to the round table of 20 black spoons to move on. She is the student of the white spoon Chinese legend. And it's actually really cute because he's kind of watching her from above. And
he watches her.
Yeah.
He's not watching anybody else.
Focused on her, just making sure she's okay. He like waves at her when, you know, they first announced all the white spoons. And so it seems like they have a very cute and close relationship. Yes. She makes dongpo ro dumplings, which I've never
tried. What is dongpo ro? Because several people...
I know. It's literally like, do these people not know how to make anything but dongpo ro and mapo tofu? Dongpo ro is like a very fatty piece of pork belly, and they like fry it and steam it, and so when it's steamed it basically like gets all the fat out of the fat, and so when you eat it it's almost like jelly, and it's all like in a soy sauce braise. Like, you can't make it yourself at home, so it's a very much a restaurant dish. But anyway, she makes these dumplings, and then as she's flipping it, the juice has leaked out of the dumplings.
Right.
There's nothing more painful for a Chinese person than to see dumpling juice fall out of a dumpling. Like onto the table and get wiped up with a napkin. I'm like, oh my God, that's supposed to be eaten. It's so painful. Even my kids know when they're eating a xiaolongbao, which is a
Yeah, soup dumpling.
Soup dumpling. No juice of the dumpling is to be wasted. So yeah, that was very painful. So the fact that she moved on, if it was Chef On coming to...
Exactly. Well, that's why she was lucky to get Chef Pikjongwon, because he cares about the flavor. He didn't even care that it was off of the plate, you know, that the crispy edges weren't full. He just ate it and was like, oh, this is juicy.
Guy ate hella dumplings.
He kept eating. God.
My friend April was like, man, they take some big ass bites.
Like, oh, we'll talk about that the next episode. But yeah, do you think they like go and like...
There's no puke? Napkins. I see no napkins. I see no napkins.
No like puke bucket.
You know, like Padma Lakshmi on Top Chef, they all like are nibbling.
She nibbles.
It. Nibbles. Yeah, she... One bite and you're gone. Right. No, these guys eat like 14 dumplings at a station.
I do love watching Pikjongwon eat though.
Oh, he's so like cute just, when he's
just,
eating.
Like, just joyful, just like jolly.
Mm-hmm. The last guy that really stood out to me, I call him Big Head Little Glasses. He's the aglio e olio guy. So many vowels. So it's spaghetti with garlic and olive oil. He has a big head, little glasses. He uses boxed pasta. It looked like the Safeway brand, Signature Select. It wasn't even Barilla.
But I'm sure in Korea, that thing is expensive.
Yes, that's imported.
It's imported.
I think the Barilla controversy is that they say it's made in Italy, but it's like made in Michigan. I'm pretty sure. I mean, that would be like, okay, I'm sorry, but like you have 100 minutes to do a signature dish. You're making just olive oil, garlic, spaghetti. You're not going to make your own spaghetti. That's like making pizza with DiGiorno.
If he was on Top Chef, he'd be out.
Out.
They're like, you got this from a box?
And like, why would this take 100 minutes? So he has some fancy way of cooking his pasta al dente.
He takes it out and put it on a sheet pan and then covers it with another pan so it kind of steams in its own heat.
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been great because Chef On also was like, you passed. This was so good. I think also Koreans love aglio e olio. It's everywhere.
Is it?
Yeah, like in wine bars. They're just like obsessed with that.
Oh, and then one last person who made an imprint was Auntie Omakase number one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, number one?
I don't know.
Why is she number one?
Did I make that up? I thought I saw number one somewhere. It looks like she serves food out of a small shop. She was the one wearing the full hanbok, the only one. Did you ever go to like those small Tokyo alleys?
Yes.
Where it's like four people sit. It looks like it's the bottom of their house and it's like their living room. And every day you get something different. It's so, so fun.
I would love to go there. I've also seen on TikTok that her restaurant is very big. Or she's actually now, it looks like at a shijang, one of those outdoor kind of wet markets.
Yeah, she's at the Gyeongdong market.
Ah.
Her restaurant's name is Andongji.
And it looks super busy.
Yeah. I've never been to that market. I've been to Kwangjang market, which is the other kind of outdoor
seafood where there's COVID everywhere.
Just don't eat the pangolin and you won't get COVID. Okay. My sister-in-law is going to Korea next month. And we were talking about where she wanted to go and try from the show. And I was like, you got to try her food, right?
Her food looked so good. And the way she was feeding Pikjongwon with her hands, like she made a wrap for him. My grandma's kimchi, fresh kimchi that she would make and then wrap with an oyster and then a piece of bosam pork. And then she would feed us with her hands. That memory to me is a core memory and is one that like really makes me nostalgic and miss my grandma very much. And I'm curious for you, is there a food that kind of transports you to a different time?
Yes. I studied abroad my freshman year summer in Beijing, and at the university, there was a noodle shop. I would go there almost every day. And there was a liang mian, which is like a cold noodle, but like Beijing style. So it's like kind of spicy and saucy. And it just was like that. Whenever I can't really find that flavor here, but when I do, it just like zooms me right back into that little noodle shop in my youth. It always is the home cooked foods,
it is.
Right? Like you're never going to say it was the fourth course of a 12 course Michelin star restaurant. I think that's going to like really give you that same feeling. So that brings me to what I wanted to call this corner, which is a daily dish. We've seen so many dishes presented. Which dish did you want to try the most?
It has to be the oyster pancake and the oyster
kimchi.
Even
if it was salty?
Well, I would get a bowl of rice, but I want that like home cooked meal. Also, my mom is very light on the salt. Like, she's mm-hmm. she's one of those, like, almond moms, as they call on TikTok. Like, she would never salt things. And so, like, when I eat something salty, it just, oh, it feels so good. That was the meal I wanted. What about you?
I actually am going the opposite. I want something that I couldn't get at my local restaurant. There was a guy, he called himself the celebrities chef. He has a restaurant in Hanamdong, and he did the vegetarian sashimi plate. But it was so interesting because it's a very bold choice to go vegetarian in a Korean competition.
Yeah.
And it's a little gimmicky, right? Because he's doing the, like, it looks like something else.
Look like the tuna.
Yes. But the white spoons were like, oh, he's being very smart about it. He put because the beet with the avocado.
He knows what's fatty and how that would mirror a piece of fatty tuna.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very curious because actually when I watched it the last time, I don't remember what happened to this guy, but I had no desire to eat his food. It's like, I mean, I eat beets and kiwi and lotus root all the time.
I know, but when you can do it in a way that tastes different, you know, that's not a thing you can just go to a local Korean restaurant. I mean, you go to a local restaurant and get it. Pancake, you can't get that. The other one I liked was the mapo tofu from the God of Seasoning, who I really wanted to try because Peck was like, oh, you are the God of Seasoning. Like, he was like, it was so perfectly seasoned.
Yes.
I want to try what perfectly seasoned mapo tofu tastes like.
So we just went to a birthday dinner for one of our friends, and unfortunately you could not make it, but we went to a Chinese restaurant and did a banquet meal. It was so good. You know, this is also reminiscent of my childhood. We don't really do that anymore as adults. And I think we should bring the tradition back. But, you know, we got the whole fish. We got...
Did you get sea cucumber?
There was no sea cucumber, but I love sea cucumber. Uh-huh. You know, there were just all these, like, traditional dishes that...
You have a soup. Did you get a soup?
We got a soup. Yep. Oh, so good with the little mushrooms.
Yeah, my husband always jokes that the soup comes last. He's like, why is it soup for dessert? I'm not sure.
Actually, ours came out first.
Okay.
So it was like a great little teaser. And then at the end of it, we had like six or seven dishes. And we were like, well, is there anything else? And I was like, what about a mapo tofu? And then so we ordered it. And the restaurant was shutting down. We were the only people left in the restaurant. It was like 9 p.m. And they're like, mapo tofu coming right up. Oh. They just brought it up. You know, like a Chinese restaurant. They're like, yeah. Whipped it up. 5 minutes. Came out. It was insane how good it was.
Really? I gotta try it.
I mean, douse, I'm sure, with MSG, but it was, oh my gosh, it just, okay. It was so good.
Oh, nice. I also thought maybe we could, while there's still 100 people, marry F. Kill. It always gets harder towards the end to marry F. Kill people, but we got a lot of contestants to pick from.
Okay.
So, marry.
I think I would say I would marry the Kogi Kangpe, the meat master.
The one who made kalbijjim.
Kalbijjim, kalbunyeon.
Kalbunyeon, like a beef bourguignon.
Yeah.
That looked delicious too.
That looked so good.
He had that, like, was it like a squash puree in
the
bottom?
Yeah, butternut squash puree.
Vegetables.
The whole grapes thing was a little bit odd.
Mm-hmm. I looked him up. He has worked in New York. He kind of had an American vibe to me. Yeah, so...
I just thought he was very creative and, you know, interesting guy.
I'd marry Chef Peck.
I mean, you would be so well fed.
He's so jolly. His permed hair. His, like, hair is so, like, old guy permed. And he's rich as fuck.
He is.
I'll take that jajangmyeon money.
He married an actress.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I looked back at old videos and photos of him. He looks so different.
He did. He was much
more handsome.
Slimmer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
F.
Triple star?
He does have a great perm too.
You know, does he?
Chef Pack has the old guy perm and Triple Star has like a young, cool guy perm.
Yes.
No Asian has hair naturally like that. Like just kind of like falls into place and it's kind of have like a wave to it. He's got some good hair. I would F. Aglio Eolio. Big head, little glasses. Dang.
You want to be steamed like a pasta.
Yes. Make me al dente. Kill.
Is going to be Bibimbap Man.
Oh, I know. Bibimbap Man who dressed up like a Joseon Dynasty king.
Kim Sejong. He also made food on a symbol. And Baek Jong-won was like, did you wash this thing? Because I don't want to eat off of it. And then he made Baek Jong-won do all these antics, like drumming, singing.
He looked truly shocked that he wasn't making it. I have to kill Austin.
Oh, right.
My God.
Yeah, I forgot about that guy.
Oh, damn. Fuck this shit.
Fuck that shit.
Oh, gosh. Get a new identity, Austin. Oh, one last thing. This logo, the black and white spoon logo. So I'm preparing an optical illusions lesson for my Girl Scout troop. And one of them is this. Is like, so the logo is a circle and it's split down the middle and it's black and white on both sides. You could either see spoon through the center or you could see two faces on the sides.
I just looked it up.
Yes. What do you see? You saw spoons?
Oh, I saw spoons initially, but now I see the faces.
Yeah. I see the faces and it actually takes me a while to see the spoons.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder what that says. Left brain or right brain?
Right. Okay. That was it for.
Are you going to use this logo for the
I'll use this logo. I'll see what the girls say. There's a lot of black and white illusions that are really fun. They're earning their senses badge. And so I'm also doing, because it's Halloween coming up, a Halloween themed, we're going to blindfold them and we're going to have bowls. And so I'm like skinning grapes and we're going to be like, these are human eyeballs and they have to touch it. And we're going to have human eyeballs, like a jello brain.
Poop.
Okay. That wasn't on the menu. I can't have them walking around with,
you know, just chocolate
all over the hands. No. We have like those little cocktail sausages for toes. Yes. Like I'm putting a fish out so they can touch the fish. So I'm very excited.
Oh my gosh. That excites me because I'm having a very small shindig for my son's friends for Halloween. So maybe
do that. It's so fun.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Okay. That was Culinary Class Wars episodes 1 and 2. We thought we wouldn't have too much to talk about for Culinary Wars, but you guys should see the record time on this. It is one of our longer ones. So hope you guys are watching the show and enjoying it as much as we are. We will be back next week with episodes 3 and 4. Can't wait to talk to you. And until then,
bye.